Maybe you should go and do some contemplating. Right reason.
I'm the Bachelorette and I'm rapping to you poolside. Here to find
food. Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hi, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is Rose Buddies.
And it's the dawn of a new era. Everything you know is wrong, and it's changed, and it's different now. Put all that old shit you knew in the fucking toilet where it belongs and flush it down. You'll never see it again unless you're a plumber. Joe the Plumber. Do you think he watched? Do you think Joe the Plumber watched the premiere of Rachel's season of The Bachelorette? Do you think Joe the Plumber tuned in for this one?
Do the kids of today even get that reference?
Was Joe the Plumber still part of the cultural bubble that we all exist in? I guess people are always talking about the bubble. I just assume Joe the Plumber is in it. He's the only plumber I know of other than Mario and Luigi and Wario and Waluigi. Are they even plumbers? I know Mario and Luigi are. I think Wario and Waluigi are just unemployed.
Are we recording Rose Buddies right now?
I don't know which one this is. Thank you for joining us for Rose Buddies. We're going to talk about The Bachelorette. It's a new season starring Rachel, The Bachelorette. Still haven't figured out a good way not to make that confusing for us and you.
No.
Because there's a Rachel on this one, too, isn't there?
Arlins?
Huh?
I'm trying to come up with a name for her. You know, J-Lo, but Arlins.
So you assumed that you would stay Rachel.
Well, I would hope so.
Okay. Well,
do you want me to be Griffin's wife?
No, God, but she's a bachelorette. There's a certain level, you know what I mean? There's a certain level of, she's the bachelorette.
And what am I?
You're not the bachelorette. No. You're the host. You're the best host of America's best bachelorette podcast. But you're not a bachelorette.
So just like Mrs. McElroy then?
Oh no, don't do this to me. We hope you enjoyed. I know it's weird. We always have such a huge spike in listeners and people get on board and stay on board during the seasons of The Bachelorette. So hello, welcome. This may be your first episode.
Yeah.
This is our, fourth proper season, not counting Bachelor in Paradise or any of the other weird bastardizations of this franchise.
Fourth.
Yeah. Ben, JoJo, Nick, and now this.
Wow, you're right.
I know, dude. So we are excited to talk about it. I was excited to watch it, and I'm excited to keep watching it because she's just so good, I think.
She's real good. You're going to hear probably a lot of complaints about the gentleman on the show.
Well, it's because the gentleman is just
Can I say something?
Uh-oh.
Dudes have yet to really stack up to the ladies. Because let me tell you something.
Are you saying, in general or
No, on this show.
Okay.
Think about Andy.
Yes. Just
think about Caitlin.
Yeah. JoJo was good. I thought JoJo was good.
JoJo. These are women of intellect, women of beauty, women of deep compassion and humor.
Okay. We get Nick, Chris,
Ben,
Juan Pablo, both Bens.
The dudes are fine.
There hasn't been a good one.
But
was
these
the last,
ladies are these ladies are pretty stellar.
What was the last good bachelor? What was the last bachelor that you really lost your mind? It was supposed to be Nick, right? I was all psyched for Nick.
Yeah, I guess Nick. But even Nick had this impish, who, me? Quality that kind of got on my nerves.
He always looked like he was trying to play off a fart, more or less always. And it's, I don't know, we don't see that kind of behavior from the great bachelorettes of our time.
I don't understand why the women have to be so exceptional and the men can be so bland.
I will say this. I don't think next season is going to be a good bachelor
based on the
motley crew of bandits we've assembled here today. I'll say this. I don't think the dudes are all that bad. And I don't think this was I know there's a lot of folks who listen to this podcast and don't watch the show, and maybe last night was the first episode you watched, and I saw a lot of people saying are you kidding me with this? And I feel like it was kind of actually a very tame, very, very, very by the books episode of The Bachelorette.
You said that to me last night, and my argument is the first episode is always it's not indicative of what the season's going to be. It's always just kind of boring.
It's not good. Now I will say, caveat, and we should talk about this before we dive into the episode. Maybe the worst bios ever. Maybe the worst.
Yeah.
Based on the bios, holy shit, y'all.
Man. Some of those bios you can't find anymore because ABC removed them after some uproar.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. One of the contestants is a pro wrestler named Kenny, who is an African-American gentleman, and he's a pro wrestler, and he has a 10-year-old daughter, and like his intro seemed like really sweet, and he, throughout the episode, like, I thought he was one of my favorite dudes, like, in the cast.
Yeah, it seemed funny.
One of his answers that ABC took down was, like, what's the wildest sex thing you've ever done? And he said, like, had sex with a woman while her husband watched. And ABC was like, let's just get that one. Clip a snip snip. Which, like, if that's your lifestyle, go hog wild. But ABC was like, let's not.
Yeah, we're a Disney company now.
And I think the biggest one was Bryce. And this is probably, like, the most egregious thing that came out of these bios. Bryce is a firefighter. And his answer to the question, like, what's one thing you hope you don't find out, or what's your worst date fear?
Worst date fear. Yeah.
And he said, finding out that the girl's a dude. So just slinging some transphobia, just like from the hip there, Bryce. There was another one also, another hyper transphobic comment from Lucas. I'm gonna limit us to three times. Are we allowed to say his fucking brand on this show? So I'm not gonna waste it now. He's a fucking complete goober. But his answer to who's somebody alive or dead you'd love to have dinner with? And he said, dead Bruce Jenner, alive Caitlyn Jenner. I'm sure that'd be an interesting conversation. Okay, dude.
That's so gross because you can tell he thinks he's being clever. And that makes it even worse to me.
Yeah, very clever and very timely and relevant. And like, yeah, that dude sucks on ice.
Yeah, there's a
lot of stuff,
though.
There's a lot of stuff. And a lot of it, like, a lot of it was just perplexing. For instance, Diggy, just looking at his bio, like, he's like, oh, okay, this guy seems cool. And then he tells a story about how, like, he had a one night stand, and in the morning, the woman he hooked up with got a text saying her brother had gone missing. So he pretended to go to sleep so he didn't have, he pretended to be asleep so he didn't have to help find him. And it's like, what?
Yeah. Do these people not realize that the bios are going to be public? Like, I don't understand. It seemed. Every season, it seems like awful bios come out.
This was maybe the worst set of
Definitely,
bios, because
yeah.
there were very few people who made it through the gauntlet of these bios sort of untouched.
Yeah.
There was more like really rough stuff. And
what
happened
to the previous seasons where everybody just talked about diarrhea?
Everybody talked about diarrhea and Dumb and Dumber. Those are the only two things that people talk about.
My biggest fear is diarrhea on a date, and I love the movie Dumb and Dumber.
My favorite scene in Dumb and Dumber is where Jeff Daniels gets diarrhea. So yeah, after the bios, and here's the thing. Here's what's interesting about the bios. You watch this show and you see Bryce, and he comes out in his firefighter uniform, and he's just kind of boring, and it's just like, oh, it's Bryce, he's just a boring dude. But because of these bios, yeah. I know certain stuff about this dude that is fucking awful, and
I know you can't fool me, ABC. Yeah,
So ABC actually put out a statement saying, like, Bryce's views are not ABC or Rachel's views. So we just deleted his comment instead of starting a dialogue around it, or letting it remain there because now people who didn't see that shit and watch this are like, oh, Bryce, he hates fire so much. And it's like, yeah, he's also says some transphobic shit. Yeah. My expectations for the dudes were not so stellar.
Yeah.
You want to get into it?
Yeah. Here we are.
Hi, welcome to the premiere.
Okay. Episode one. We get to see Rachel doing her photo shoot.
This was a weird, it was like in media res where she was like in that red dress throwing up the flower petals, like looking at the photos
like
while people
no
were
music,
like, yeah,
like very like we're behind the corner watching this happen.
While the photographers are like, you're going to be a star. You're going to have so many people swarming. You're not going to know what to do. And she's like, oh, stop.
And then Rachel kind of humbly reviewing the photos and saying, you guys are miracle workers.
Yeah.
So, you know, here we are watching this thing. We get a little sneak peek behind the scenes. And then it unceremoniously is over. And we are at the mansion with Chris.
Hi, Chris. You look great. Oh, you've dressed up for us. Thank you, Chris.
And then Chris does this speech that he does every season where he acts as if the Bachelor Bachelorette has been accepted into the religion of the franchise. Cause he's like, you know, Rachel came in skeptical, you know, and she wasn't sure this was going to work, but she fell deeply in love. And then now she's ready to try it again because she believes in the process.
Rachel like leaned over and she's like, this is a Scientology like indoctrination video. Like, we're going to juice your Thetans or whatever they do.
It's like Rachel was skeptical, but she became a member of our family and now she has accepted us and she wants to commit herself in the most serious way you can, which is by testing out all of these men that we have also brought into the family. It just felt
very, very, a lot of family talk. There's also a lot of like, Rachel's a woman who has everything going for her, a successful job, a very well put together woman. But there's one thing that's missing that only we can provide. Like, no, I'm pretty sure she'd be good eventually.
So just a quick little summary of Rachel. She's 31. She's a trial attorney in Dallas. We get some footage of her on the basketball court, which maybe is an interest of hers. I don't know. And she says that she is sweet and sour and sassy and classy. And that all her life she has been kind of an overachiever, but she waited too long to express her love to Nick. And she tends to be kind of careful about love. But here's her chance to focus on a part of her life she's been neglecting. But more than any of that, she's a dog named Copper.
Copper is the best dog I've ever seen.
That is the best dog.
Copper has a hurt leg. Hurt front leg, and it's very sad, but Copper looks like, has like a 1 pound body with like 30 pounds of hair on it, and it's a very good dog. And she brings the dog to her little side mansion, which I don't think I've ever seen before. And it's a game changer.
Her side mansion?
Yeah, where she lives. She couldn't live in the house with all those fucking dudes.
The dog, according to somebody in our Rose Buddies group, the dog is a Finnish Spitz.
Oh, that's a gross name, but the rest of it is good.
So now limo exits.
Right into it. I mean, we do get like a preview.
First we get the packages.
Yeah, and we can skip the packages mostly. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
we learn about Kenny. I like Kenny. Oh, I think the biggest sort of standout, it came right after Lucas, whose catchphrase again, we're going to save. Got three of those in the quiver. Going to hold off.
Yeah.
But he's a big, dumb asshole. But immediately after him and his a lot of people said like sort of bargain bin Jim Carrey shtick, was Josiah. Nope, not Josiah.
Blake. Blake was the aspiring drummer that talked a lot about intercourse.
Oh, there's also him.
I thought that was who
He talked about his beepus a lot, and he said, I don't like talking about my beepus, but I've been told that my beepus is real cool. It's a very cool hog. It does good stuff in there, and it has good width and length, and it's cool. I wanted to talk about Josiah's package because, and I'll put in a trigger warning here for suicide. Josiah, when he was a little kid, found his brother, had hanged himself in their backyard. And it like threw his life into a tailspin and he got arrested and was brought before a judge. And the judge was like, hey, you know, turn your life around. And so Josiah like became an attorney in the very like courtroom where he had been arraigned. And it's like an unbelievable story. And he seems like, I don't know, he seems like a really like.
Yeah, he seems to have a lot of depth.
Like, seems to have a lot of depth. He's also like, once he gets in the house, you can get to know him a little bit more. He's also a very confident dude. Not like, that there was a dearth of those.
The guy right before him was Diggy, and Diggy's big thing was that he has 575 pairs of sneakers, and then we go straight into Josiah. So it was like, oh, there's...
You think he could put on one of those fucking pairs of sneakers to help that woman find her lost brother, but whatever.
Oh, God. So those were the packages. Yeah, the one I'll point at... Well, you know what? Let's just get to it organically. Let's just tell the story of the night.
Okay.
And then we'll return to the bios and the packages as necessary.
I like that. Okay.
Okay. So do you want to share what you're drinking?
It's red wine. I don't know.
Okay.
It's a nice red wine.
I just wanted to set the mood.
My agent got it for me as a birthday present.
Oh, here we go. Big time Griffin. Hey. It's been a while since we've heard from Hollywood Griffin McElroy.
Listen, you did say My Brother, Me is available on iTunes now. Go buy it.
You did say in media res earlier.
Well, okay. That just means I'm well read.
Before limo exits, again, we're not at limo exits yet. I'm sorry, I keep teasing it. All the ladies show up.
Oh my God, this is the best Super Friends ever.
Yeah, so we all knew that Rachel was popular on Nick's season, but all the women show up for her. And when I say all the women, I mean like
six or seven.
Yeah, like six or seven women.
To get back to that, when they announced who the next Bachelorette was going to be, I think it was at Women Tell All or something, right? Because she came out after the final rose when all of the contestants were still there. And I have never seen a response like this where like all of the women were like fucking psyched for her.
Yeah.
Most of the time, like it's more reserved than that because I think everybody who goes on this show also wants to be the next Bachelor or Bachelorette. But this was the most universal, like Rachel kicks ass and she's going to do fucking great and I'm excited for her.
Yeah. So just for example, it was Raven, Corinne, Alexis, Jasmine, Christina, and Whitney.
Whitney. Yeah.
Yeah. And, everybody's giving her some advice. But Raven's was kind of the most poignant, because Rachel's kind of talking about her experience with Nick's season and how she has some regrets. And she's like, you know, I'll never forget. I talked to you, Raven, and you said you just have to let yourself fall. And then Rachel gets kind of emotional because you can tell that advice is really meaningful for her because she was so reserved and Raven really came to her. And then Raven gives this little speech about, you know, we're just all rooting for you and we're all such different women, but the fact that we're here rallied around you just shows how you pull out the best in everyone. Mm. And it was just like, it was just a real rah, rah, rah session.
And then Raven said, like, if you ever come across the squirt, you're just run, do not walk. It's such a good time, she said. She said, just like, that's my favorite memory of my life.
So in this thing you've created here.
I didn't make it. This is like ABC.
The idea is that Rachel would go back to a yurt.
Yeah.
On her season.
Uh-huh.
And Raven is giving her advice to say.
It was a good yurt. She said,
in that yurt.
It's not imaginary. She said this. She said, it was a good yurt. She got really close to her face. She put her face up against Rachel's face and just said, it was a good yurt.
Mm-hmm.
Get there.
Mm-hmm.
Or be square.
Oh, geez.
Squirt yurt. Sunday. Ooh. Sunday. It was a real nice moment.
Now limos.
Hey, hell yeah.
How about that? First out of the limo. And this is an important position.
Is it?
A lot of times the first person out of the limo is going to be kind of a front runner for the season.
It's like a baby duckling thing. Like this is the first you imprint on the first one that comes out.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm not saying Rachel's a baby duckling. I'm saying everyone is.
Somebody posted that 538 did this whole statistical analysis.
Yeah.
Of like what makes you a likely front runner. And I looked at it and then I just put it away. It was so in depth.
I know.
I couldn't.
Well, their big thing was first impression rose don't mean shit, basically. It means you're probably a strong contender, but it's not a good way of predicting the winner.
Yeah.
Which
they even went into detail on like which relationships last and what you can learn about their placement in the season and whether or not the relationship will last. And I was like, this is more detailed than
I want. Absolutely.
First out of the limo, Peter. Peter is also like Nick from Wisconsin. And he's a business owner.
Okay. We really didn't get like there were much like every season before this, or at least the past few seasons, like there are blocks which is like, hey, I'm bye.
Yeah.
While like other dudes inside the house are like doing a monologue.
Next out is, I'm not going to go through every single one. I'm just going to because there's 31.
There's 31.
Way, there's 31.
There's 31 boys.
But Josiah is next out, and he's the one. There are several attorneys this season, but he's the one that says, I think that you'll find that beyond a reasonable doubt, I'm the right match for you. And Rachel kind of laughs and says, oh, legal terms.
Rachel is like, Rachel is very, very, I think like her thing that has like stood out in my mind as to like what kind of bachelorette she's going to be based on this first episode. She's the most gracious human being that's ever been on this show. Yeah. 'Cause there are people that come through this line that like drop some real stinkaroos and she's like, I love it. And it's like, you probably don't love it, but that's very, you're making, I'm sure you're making all of these boys feel very comfortable.
Well, it seems like she has an exceptional sense of humor. Like she is able to find the entertainment in a lot of the awful moments, which speaks to me that like she's got a good perspective coming in because there are a lot of terrible dudes. Kenny comes out. And grabs her arm and does what we referenced in our previous Bachelor Pad episode as the arm worm.
The arm worm.
The hand worm.
There's got to be a real name for that.
I don't know what it is.
It's where you like make a worm, but you're doing it with your arms.
Yeah.
You know what the arm worm is. Oh, come on. Don't be a jerk.
Next person I'll talk about is Will.
Oh, Jesus.
Will comes out in, if I remember correctly, suspenders and glasses.
Yeah, and like pants with the socks up over the legs and like high-waisted pants and
kind of stumbles, trips a little bit, and says the catchphrase that we all know and love.
Cheese, please.
No.
I'm the baby. He said, I'm the baby. Gotta love me.
He said,
Ma! Ma!
He said, did I do that?
Deborah.
Don't step on my incredible Urkel.
Sorry,
impression.
Hit it. Sorry.
Did I do that?
That's a really good Urkel, babe.
Thank you.
The most amazing thing was the prestige here, where he ducked back inside the limo and then came out with some of his Urkel cosplay stripped off. And she says, "You're Stefan Urkel now." And he says, "I don't even have to tell you." And I was like, "Fuck yes to all of this."
That was a nice moment. Brady comes out with a huge hammer and a block of ice.
I know nothing about Brady. He probably said some shit in his bios. This was excellent. I like this a lot.
And he brings the hammer down on the ice and he says that he wanted to break the ice. My favorite moment was when he walked into the house, the rest of the guys shout, "Thor's here," which I enjoyed. And then some of the guys, and we mentioned this earlier, some of the guys that did on the season finale, we got to meet four of the men.
Yes. Dean, Blake, E, DeMario, and Eric.
Yes. And so Dean comes out. Dean is the one who said that he was going to go black and never go back. And when he came out of the limo, he really just wants to find out if Rachel liked it.
And she, so when he said this during the, after the final rose, I feel like everybody's skeletons like poked out a little bit. Cause that sucks. It's like, that sucks a lot.
Universal cringe moment. And I'm sure by the time the show started taping, he had heard some stuff.
Yeah. I'm sure he'd heard a few things. But she in the moment where he said it, she said, "Oh, I love that." Sort of being very gracious about it. And here she's like, "You know, I know a lot of people either love that or hate it. Personally, I loved it." It's like, okay. Glad to have that on the record. I would like to also go on the record as to say me in
hated it
at home, did not enjoy it very
thumbs
much.
Down.
Thank you, Dean. Two thumbs emphatically down.
You got a lot of work to do, Dean. Eric comes out and is just so charming. He just says like, "Oh, I just keep seeing you. I just keep running into you. This must mean something."
And then they dance again. He was the one who did the little dance, the little two-step dance with her.
Yeah.
And they basically do it again. He's like, "That can be our thing. We can be the dancing ones."
Yeah, it was wonderful. Blake. So Blake was also night one, and he was the super nervous, awkward one.
I don't remember anything about his thing except that he was really awkward.
And he was just really nervous, and he took like a picture with her or something.
Ugh.
And so he knew he had some ground to make up. So he came out with a marching band, and he was playing the snare drum with that marching band.
Two things just to tie it all together. He is the Wiener Man, and fucking, I don't know if it was Evan or Carly. I think it was Carly tweeted, or was it Evan? You know, Evan and Carly from Bachelor in Paradise, and he was like the sex expert on JoJo's season who got sent home but found love in paradise. It said something like, "You can't be the penis man. I'm the penis man."
Yeah.
"You can't be the penis man. There's already a penis man, and it's me, Evan, the penis man." Also, his career, Blake's is aspiring drummer, which is just like, just do it. Just do it. You don't have to be an aspiring drummer. Just get out there and drum.
Yeah, I mean, he seemed pretty good when he was drumming.
Yeah. He's a good news, bud. Scratch that first word out. You're drumming. You're really doing it.
Next up is Fred. Now, Fred is kind of fascinating to me. Fred brings out this yearbook and shows a picture of himself in third grade. And as soon as he does, you can kind of start to see Rachel register what's happening. And then he thumbs forward a few pages to Rachel in seventh grade.
Yeah, I think that was right.
And it becomes clear they went to the same school. And then Rachel tells us that she was his camp counselor and that he was a bad kid.
She kept saying that over and over again.
Yeah.
And so she's like kind of unsure about it. This is, I think, the only kind of like bomb that is dropped on her. Like the only like surprise. There's no returning contestants from past seasons. There's no.
So far.
They wouldn't fucking.
No, remember Nick showed up mid-season when he was on.
Yeah, I guess
Caitlin.
That's true. But I'm pretty sure they teased that because we knew about that when we were drafting. There's no like, we hooked up at a wedding once and you don't remember me.
Or here's your ex-boyfriend.
This
back.
Is it. This is the only one. And she seems kind of, trepidatious about it.
Yeah. Then we meet the tickle monster who, just goes in for the tickle.
Jonathan. He says, like, hold out your hands and close your eyes. And she says, okay. And he tickles her. Ugh.
Yeah, pretty gross.
It's the worst.
I personally hate being tickled. I hate it.
Let me pitch you this, though. What if you were on television and it was a stranger? Does it make it better if you were on television and you were very, very nervous and you had to meet 31 strangers and one of them tickled you very badly?
I think my reaction to that, I mean, this again speaks to how gracious Rachel is. My reaction to that would have been like, hey, stop. No.
My reaction to that would have been like, hold on. I can't see your chyron right now, but does it say something along the lines of like professional tickler? And he'd be like, it says tickle monster. And I'd be like, get back in the fucking car and you need to leave right now. Immediately.
I hate it. I when somebody tickles me, I get so angry because I am laughing because I am very ticklish. But I want them to stop.
And your laughs are precious little honey-soaked gemstones.
Thank you.
It's like, here's a little emerald, and why is it so sticky? It's because it's one of Rachel's laughs, and it's covered in honey. And for somebody to fucking steal that from you, I'm getting angry just thinking about it.
Well, I just feel like when you laugh, people feel encouraged. But for me, it's involuntary, and you force me to be complicit in something that I am not complicit in. I don't know. Anyway. We're spending a lot of time in Rachel's feminist corner on this episode.
We sure are. I don't think not being tickled is a feminist issue. It's a human issue. I also don't want to be tickled.
You're not as ticklish as me, though.
Well, no, I've got more. I've just got a big, soft body. I can't feel anything.
You know what somebody told me once about being ticklish?
Hmm.
That if you're ticklish, it's because you have a fear of intimacy.
All right.
Isn't that kind of gross?
It's a gross thing to tell anybody, yeah. When she laughed, he should have been like, looks like someone's got a fear of intimacy. I'm John, I'll see you in the house. Yeah. See you in there. Sorry you're afraid of intimacy.
Let's get to one of our favorite contestants, Adam.
I don't know about, I mean, okay.
Entertaining.
Entertaining.
Adam brings a smaller version of himself that he calls Adam Jr., which is a real like low budge mannequin made out of like styrofoam, I think.
Here's what I'm going to say about Adam Jr. Adam Jr. is the funniest doll ever. Adam Jr. was perfectly created for maximum humor potential. It's the proportions of Adam. It is the flawless wig that Adam Jr. is wearing. It is the like really low budge, creepy, drawn on Sharpie face that Adam Jr. had.
There's a wig.
It's the child's like suit that he's like the old timey Victorian era, like impish child suit that he's wearing. It is, all of it comes together to create the funniest fucking, and it's not even like, here's my spooky doll. This is not like my Annabelle doll. It was its own thing. I saw a lot of people referencing like Franklin from Arrested Development. And now that I think about it, there were a lot of like
Arrested Development
sort of adjacent things that hopefully we'll get to more of them. And a lot of people are like, I can't wait to see Griffin's reaction to Adam Jr. He's going to lose his mind. No, I think it's the funniest fucking shit ever. And if you're not on board with that, like, I feel like you may not understand what I like about this show because it's this shit. Absolutely. This is the shit I love.
And you got to think about the preparation. So, for example, on JoJo's season, if I remember correctly, it was either JoJo or Caitlin. Some guy just stole a lamp from the hotel and that was his thing.
Lazy.
Adam, in order to create this, had to find a child's suit, a wig, a child's mannequin head, and then put it all together. Like,
it's a lot of work.
It's some work.
Some bio data about Adam. What's the most romantic present you ever received and why? Threesome. It was my birthday.
Okay.
Do you consider yourself a good cook? Yes. I used to cook 4-course meals in college and charge people. Lol. That's a restaurant. You did a restaurant. That's cool, but you did a restaurant.
Oh, Adam. Well, I like your mannequin, Adam.
Adam Jr. can stay.
So... I think at this point, there's just two more we should talk about. There's Matt, who is dressed as a penguin.
Yeah, I mean, we should only talk about him because he's on our fucking team. Our team is him and the penis one.
Yeah, so to be fair, this time with our friends, we just did a random draft.
We did Royal Rumble style, like draw numbers out of a hat and whoever exited that number. And the whole time we're like, please don't be Lucas. Please don't be Lucas.
And yeah, and so the last person we should talk about is Lucas.
Did we talk about DeMario?
No, do you want to?
Yeah, DeMario, I think, is going to be around for a while. DeMario was one of the four dudes that she met in the After the Final Rose.
He came out and he talked about, because he was on After the Final Rose, and he said, we've had a lot of firsts together. He's like, I look forward to our first date and our first kiss and our first Christmas. And she's like, whoa.
And he had plane tickets for them to fly to Las Vegas and elope in the After the Final Rose, and he still has those. He's still, like, sporting those around. Yeah. Also want to talk about Anthony, who I only mentioned. He didn't get a lot of screen time, but I saw a lot of him in the... I think I saw a lot of him in the season preview. His bio listed that his favorite book was Murakami's Wind-Up Bird Chronicle, which is one of my favorite books. Mm-hmm. I saw that. I was like, that's not Dumb and Dumber. You can stay, Anthony. Thank you.
You were the one taking notes when Anthony came on. And mm-hmm. I have in quotes next to him, here to help you understand.
Yeah, he was just like he ended up in one of those blocks where just like burned through some shit. But he just said like, I'm here to help you understand me and maybe you can help me understand you and we'll get to know each other better. It was just very like,
that's courteous.
Very straightforward.
Now should we talk about Lucas?
Yeah.
So the first, I mean, Lucas has a little like package at the beginning. So we know he's coming, but the first sight that Rachel gets of him is his loudspeaker coming out of the limo, and he reveals his height and weight through the loudspeaker. He also talks about how one testicle is larger than the other.
To which she says, like, good to know.
And then he announces himself as her future husband, and then he comes out, and he's wearing a blazer, and he is wearing a t-shirt.
It's a tank top.
Oh, yeah, you're right. A t-shirt.
For a fucking t-shirt for Rachel. Thank you.
With, I believe his face on it, correct?
And his
catchphrase.
His catchphrase is...
And he, this is the first performance we get of his catchphrase, as he is exiting the limo. She sees the shirt and she comments on it and he says, Do you want me to hear that?
Do you want to hear that now?
And he does.
And he does the catchphrase. His catchphrase is, Rachel has just leaned away from the mic. And I think she's nervous. I'm going to do it and wake up our child. I won't.
No, I know you won't.
But he's, imagine this, but times 1,000 more volume and cocaine.
You know when Goofy falls off a cliff? It's kind of what it's like.
This would be like if Goofy sat on his own balls but stayed there for 20 fucking uninterrupted seconds. He says, Waboom. And there's a lot of flailing of the head.
He shakes his head so that his cheeks flap a little, like there's a gobble quality to it.
There's a gobble quality to it, yes.
And he, like, Waboom. Leans back. It's,
yeah.
As if, like, he might give himself a hernia.
And, like, puts his hands on his knees to brace himself and goes full Mach 5 G-force, just, like, spinning his head around and screaming Waboom. He is Waboom. It is his whole life. It is his whole personal brand. And it's who he is. And, you know, it's just Waboom. It's just Waboom if you feel it. And we've all got a little Waboom in us. And, you know, my job is just Waboom. I can't with Lucas, and it's not for the reason that ABC and The Bachelorette wants me to not be able to with Lucas. It's for my own personal reasons, which is just like his existence on this show makes me think so much less of the show. And again, not in like a, how could you, Bachelorette? In like a, boy, this is the most Bachelorette shit fucking ever, y'all.
Before this, when I think about contestants with catchphrases, I think about Courtney from Ben's season, who used to steal Charlie Sheen's winning.
Yes.
She'd be like, winning.
If you Google this dude, Lucas Waboom, whatever, you'll find his website where he's selling these fucking things and he's doing tweets with hashtag Waboom. And if you tweet enough of the hashtag Waboom, you might be entered in for a winning for a free tank top of Waboom, but tell all your friends to Waboom or else I can't Waboom. It's like,
I thought we were only going to say it three times.
I then. Fucking can't. It's just like, this is this dude's whole thing. Like there are, I know people like this who like, are like, I don't want to like work to like make it in the biz. Like I know people who like try to like, I don't want to do stand up or I struck out there. Or I don't want to do things. I did a few auditions and it didn't go so well. I'm just going to like, if I can just get my one big break and be the biggest asshole about it imaginable and have like the, I want to go viral, meme me, baby.
Yeah.
It's the most like fucking, it sucks. Like it's like, just,
it's the worst of our culture right now.
It's the worst of our culture right now, but it's also the most transparent, like play fucking ever. And the fact that like this dude was included is just like, there's nothing remotely entertaining about it. Everybody's just like, oh, here's this guy. He's off his rocker. And it's like, he's not off his rocker. He just wants everybody to say Waboom and go to his website so that he will stay culturally. I mean, this is fucking Rod. This is like so many people who come on this show just like, I need to fucking juice this for all I can get.
That's a good comparison.
I need juice this for, obviously like Rod's shit was way more toxic, but it's like, this is what these fucking people do.
Yeah.
You're going to remember me forever. Well, boom, baby. Go to my website and hashtag just my Instagram.
No integrity, just an overwhelming desire for fame that will take them in any direction necessary.
And I can't like, his existence on the show makes me enjoy all of the other components of this show, a lot of which are like firing on all cylinders. It makes me enjoy them even less because this fucking guy got to be included. Like, there's this fucking walking billboard for a personal brand that stinks on ice, that is like screaming over everything without any redeeming entertainment value whatsoever. Good going, guys. You done it again. I also want to talk about this, and this is, I guess, our first sort of like media deep dive, and we have more that we want to talk about because, boy, I've read a lot of stuff about this premiere, and a lot of it was really good. But this is just an article about how maybe we should talk about this later when Blake E. and Lucas get into their little scuffle. But like, guess what? Lucas has been on reality shows before. Can you fucking believe it? Because I definitely, absolutely can.
Yeah. So then all the guys are here. They're all in the house. We get some nice moments with the guys kind of becoming friends and, of course, talking about how wonderful Rachel is.
I'm optimistic about the, like, there's a lot of, bad bro behavior. Just like, she's a really sexy girl. Like, you don't know not to say that yet. Or like, I'm going to wife her so hard. She's mine. Everybody else can leave. She's my woman. It's like, guys, no. But there is a lot of like, the Thor thing I thought was kind of funny. And there's like a lot of like friends, I think, sparking up in the house.
They're kind of making jokes. Like, for example, when Josiah is the first one to grab her away, and they're all kind of goofing on him a little bit. And they're like, what do you think they're talking about? And it's like, oh, what's your greatest case you ever solved? Which I thought was funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, then we start seeing the dudes scramble for time with Rachel. And of course, everybody's got kind of a little gimmick. Dean pulls together some sand and toys. So they make little sandcastles together.
Yeah.
Rob has a trading card that he has made of Rachel.
I don't remember who Rob is.
It's not really that important. We get our first extended period of time with Adam Jr.
Oh my God.
Or as he comes to be known, AJ.
The dudes in the house, like, are very, at this point, like, AJ is just like, oh yeah, there's AJ. He's a cool dude. I like AJ a lot. He calms me down.
They position Adam Jr. by the fire in like a supine position, just casually laying. And then this is where the bachelor has a little fun and starts overlaying some French, which is just wonderful.
Like playing like accordion music as like AJ says, like, she sparked something within me. I am awakened. And then like there's a moment where Adam tries to like steal her away. And she's like, yeah, you can, but I don't want to hang out with Adam Jr. And then it cuts back to Adam Jr. And he says, like, I disgust her.
Yeah, exactly. I disgust her in French, all in French with subtitles.
Which, like, y'all, again, I saw people, because I was watching the comments, there were people like, this is so dumb. I don't know. No, y'all, this is the shit. This is the best shit on our
earth. This is that Bachelor in Paradise stuff that we love. Like, let's not take this so seriously. Let's not manufacture drama. Let's just have some fun.
Let's just have some fun with AJ. I hope he sticks around.
I love AJ. The guys are talking about AJ's like looks, specifically like his hair.
They say like his suit is fresh. Like he looks great.
Like his hair is great. Yeah. The dudes love AJ and it's just, you kind of want him to be around all season.
Yeah.
I hope it works.
But hey, before you move on to the next person, I noticed you've been spending a lot of time with your notebook over there. And I was just wondering if I could steal you away. Oh, you got it.
Ba-choo-boop. Boop boop choop boop 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 choop boo doo doo boo. Do you love it or do you hate it?
I loved it. This is like the end of Mr. Holland's Opus, which I haven't seen.
Okay.
Hey, I want to tell you about our sponsor this week. It's stamps.com. These days, you can get anything on demand. Diapers, diaper cream, wipes for a baby's butt. other baby stuff. So why are you still going to the post office and dealing with their limited hours, you goofball, when you can get postage on demand with stamps.com? Anything you do at the post office, you can do right from home at your desk with stamps.com. You can print U.S. postage for any letter or package using your own computer and printer. And unlike the post office, stamps.com never closes because it's a fucking website.
No, the website's closed.
No, it's not. It's a website. Stop.
And I know what you're wondering. How do I know how much postage to do? Well, you can get a digital scale from stamps.com.
Hell yeah. And I'll tell you how to do that right now. If you use our code ROSE for this special offer, you can get a 4-week trial that includes postage and that sick ass digital scale. You can use it for anything. You just go to stamps.com. And before you do anything else, click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in ROSE. That's stamps.com, enter ROSE. Don't wait. Do it. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again. Hell yeah.
Okay, this message is for all the good folks in the ROSE Buddies Facebook group.
But not the bad ones. You know who you are.
And it's from Luke Gartland.
Yeah, Luke Gartland, who is a good friend of the show. And that's all I'll say about that, because I'm not a fucking narc.
Luke says, wanted to say a big thanks to everyone in the ROSE Buddies Facebook group for being the kindest, funniest, and sweetest bunch of folks ever. Seeing your hilarious responses to each episode has put the biggest dumb smile on my face, and you're all the freaking best. Special mentions for Erica Huff, Catherine Dredge, and Meredith Jessica. Thanks for vibing and keeping it tight.
So tight. Thank you all.
Luke sent that to us back in February.
Thank you, Luke, and I'm not going to fucking narc on him because I'm not that fucking type of dude, but before he was a real bro.
Thank you, Luke. And thank you to the Facebook group. We've got over 12,000 folks in there, almost 13,000.
I got another one here for K Money, and it's from DJ C Briggs, who says, happy 10-year anniversary, baby. I am so glad, quote, watch a movie. Didn't really mean watch a movie. Intimacy. we found so many more laughs, inside jokes, and reality TV obsessions thanks to Rachel Griffin. Oh, it's just that. Okay. My mistake. I thought it was
watching a movie.
The stuff. I love you so much. Love, DJ C. Briggs, Lady Eleanor Roosevelt. Wow. Rufio and Kitty Face. P.S. You've got a good, good butt. It just fucking...
Whoa.
Okay, so it circles back around to that, like... You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Some of that shake and bake, you know?
Some of those handy snacks.
Some handy, some fucking snack pack right there, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Some munchie bowls.
Fruit by the foot.
Ooh, maybe. Maybe some gushers.
Oh, no.
I don't know why it was food. That's it for this part.
Okay. That's how we exit usually, right?
The Dead Pilot Society podcast brings you hilarious comedy pilots that were never made, featuring actors like Aubrey Plaza, Andy Richter, Paul F. Tompkins, John Hodgman, Adam Scott, Molly Shannon, Busy Phillips, Tom Lennon, Anna Camp, Laurie Metcalf, Felicia Day, Michael Ian Black, Adam Savage, Paul Scheer, Ben Schwartz, Skylar Astin, Mae Whitman, Josh Molina, Ben Feldman, Nicole Byer, Jason Ritter, Sarah Chalk, Steve Agee, Jane Levy, Allison Tolman, Danielle Nicolette, Casey Wilson, Anna Ortiz, Lorraine Newman, June Diane Raphael, Kiernan Shipka, Ed Week, Zach Knight, and Carrie Kenny Silver, John Ross Bowie, Jamie Denbo, Janet Varney, Alexander Forsyth, Summer, Ellen Morales, Matt Worley, and many more. Listen at MaximumFun.org, iTunes, or wherever you download podcasts.
We should talk about Brian.
He's coming up.
Okay.
Can we spend just a moment with Fred?
I would love to hang out with Fred for a minute.
So Fred and Rachel get some more time to talk, and she tells us that she's having a little trouble seeing him as anything different than the bad kid that she was a counselor for. And that she always had to discipline him, and not in the sexy way.
Okay. You're talking about when you were kids, so.
Yeah, I know.
All right.
Okay, now let's talk about Brian. So Brian, we didn't mention his limo exit. He revealed himself to be kind of a troublemaker.
This was, oh man, this sucks. And I it sucks because I know it's going to keep going throughout the entirety of the season. But it's just like, you're trouble, I can tell. I'm the good kind of trouble. Maybe I like trouble. Well, then trouble is what trouble does, like my mama used to say.
He says that he is Colombian, and he asks if she has ever...
He is Colombian, he doesn't just say.
He says that he is Colombian, and he asks her if she has ever dated a Colombian man before. And then he kind of alludes to the fact that she is in for some trouble because he is trouble. And she kind of snickers a little
trouble
bit.
Trouble sounds good right about now. Trouble. I'd love some trouble. Well, trouble, here it comes. Double, double toil and trouble. Hocus pocus. Alamogokus.
What is that from?
Hocus pocus Alamogokus?
Yeah.
What is that fucking from? I just said it.
You said it and it felt so familiar.
Oh, today's special.
Okay. Well, that's nice.
That's nice.
It's nice to go there with you. So Brian pulls her away later in the evening and shares with her that, you know, he's 37. He's here for something serious.
Serious trouble, that is, I mean to say.
I think it's Rachel that brings it back to like, oh, are you looking to get into some trouble? And he said, well, there's a good kind of trouble too. And then he kisses her.
Just like bow.
With a lot of mouth.
And she kisses back with a lot of mouth and says, like, I wasn't planning on kissing anybody tonight, but like, oh, damn.
Yeah.
It was a good, it was a trouble kiss.
She is into it.
Yeah. So into it, in fact. Oh, maybe I don't want to give it away. Oh, I just did, didn't I? Spoilers.
Well, I mean, this is a podcast where we talk about the show.
I don't want to spoil it, though.
We're going to get to it in like 3 minutes.
Okay, but I don't want to give it away. Okay. I know there's a lot of people excited and wanted to wait off for 3 minutes.
So Chris Harrison appears and literally just takes the first impression rose, drops it on the table, and walks out. At which point I started wondering, you know, there's a lot of dudes this season who came specifically for Rachel and maybe aren't familiar with the franchise. So maybe they could have used that little Chris Harrison tutorial. Like, here's what this rose is for.
No, Chris Harrison's just like, here it is. It's this is good, probably.
Ask a friend. And this is when all the dudes start like really leaning on this, like, oh, well, I should just put that on right now. Like, that really belongs to me.
I think it was Josiah just, like, does it. Josiah, like, picks it up off the table and puts it on himself. And people are like, yo, first of all, I think that's not allowed. And also, it's, like, real bad luck, I think.
Yeah, I also hear a lot of people talking about, like, for example, DeMario talks a lot. Everyone's talking about her as their future wife.
Yeah, DeMario says, like, you know, you can come to our wedding. You'll be in the third row. It'll just be you. I'll let you bring a date, but she's my woman and she's my wife already. And so there's just like, there's a lot of that, lots of that going around.
We also, and this is the other Arrested Development moment, we get one of the contestants talking about the penguin and saying, you know, I'm here in this $2,000 suit.
Come on.
Come on.
Saying like, he's got time with her and he's in a penguin suit. I'm in this $2,000. I'm in this $4,500 suit. Come on. How dope would it have been if fucking like somebody had been like, can I steal her away? And he'd be like, yeah, sure. You can. Wait, who are you? Jean Parmesan.
The $2,000 suit man does end up getting eliminated that night. And his biggest complaint when he leaves is that he had so many outfits he wanted to wear.
Oh, poor guy. This is when I've watched a lot of this show. I've never seen a swarming quite like this before. And it made me wildly and profoundly uncomfortable.
There's a scramble point in the night when a lot of men haven't had a chance to talk to her. And they literally start lining up. Like, they start approaching her. She's talking to a guy and they stand off to the side and then they start queuing up.
So there's a moment where like Rachel's like enforcing, like, he was next in line, but if you want to, I think, get behind him and then maybe you can talk to me after him. And there's also like a lot of like, oh, sorry, bro. We need like 2 more minutes, bro. If you can just like turn around. Yeah. Thanks. I appreciate it. Just 2 more minutes. Thank you. I just got to like the crux of my story. And we see there's like some dude has a fucking vacuum cleaner that was like his prop. This is like what we're talking about, like lazy prop comedy. And he's just like walking back and forth in front of like
pretending to vacuum
while like Rachel and this other dude are like not even paying attention to the guy. Which sucks. There's one part where like Waboom gets out his stupid little bullhorn that he was like announcing his weird balls on earlier. And it's just like giving a quick play by play while also screaming Waboom at everybody.
And this is when I had a moment. So every year there's like a package for a contestant that I think like, oh, I really like that guy. And so Mohit.
Oh, yeah.
Has this great package where we get to meet his whole family and they're all, Bollywood dancers and they all dance together. And I literally turned to Griffin and I said, oh, I hope he gets to hometowns because his family seems really great and they're all really good dancers.
And he seemed really great in his package. He was the one, y'all.
He got trashed.
He got fucked up. Like,
he was so
kind
drunk.
Of scary fucked up. Like, I forget who was talking about it. It was like, he's not like, reckless drunk. He's like, you missed a step there, bud, drunk. And, somebody's like trying to talk to him and be like, go on, get in there, go get your time. And he can't even like walk forward to Rachel. And so somebody just like walks in front of him. And I don't think we hear Mohit speak the entire night because I think he's just way too fucked up.
At this point, Lucas gets some time with her, gives her her own shirt that she can wear. And she seems to like think he's entertaining.
I think this is, I'm so fucking mad about, I don't understand how you make this show and you say, let's get as many people on here who want to use this show as a platform for their dumbass personal brand. Like, doesn't that feel wrong? You know, like, we want people who are here to be entertaining on our show, not people who are here to like, say their catchphrase as many times as possible so that.
Yeah, it's a sticky precedent because if this becomes a thing now, what's to stop next season from being like 20 people?
I mean, I'll tell you what will stop it. A fucking casting director who's like, no, get the, well, boom, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. So this is where we should talk about, at this point, Blake starts telling us that, Lucas isn't there for the right reasons, and that he wants to take it upon himself to make sure that Lucas is exposed for who he really is. And Griffin and I were kind of like, I wonder why Blake is making it such a personal mission to expose Lucas. Cause the rest of the guys just kind of seem like Lucas is a joke, But yeah. Blake is like, no, we really need to get to the bottom
Blake
of
is like filling the role of just like instigator who wants to step in and be the foil to like the person who is like, I guess the villain, but Lucas really isn't that at this point. Like he's just like this obnoxious douche. But he steps in and is like, I'm going to say something because he's being disrespectful. Shouting for Rachel through a bullhorn, it's not right. And so he sits him down and is like, why'd you even come into this show? Do you really, are you here to find love? And Lucas is like, are you? And he says, I'm here for the possibility to find love. And I think Lucas just screams with a boom, like into his butt or something like that. In response, he says, everybody's got a little waboom in them. And the only funny thing that came out of this is Blake saying, I have absolutely no waboom in me.
Yeah.
So there's this like, fight, right? And it comes out of nowhere. It is the most contrived. But there's a layer deeper than that, which I read about. I think somebody posted this in the Rose Buddies group. It's a fan-cited article. Bachelorette 2017 contestants Blake and Lucas bring real-life feud to Rachel's season. Blake and Lucas both appeared in the Wii TV reality series X-Isle, like E-X-Isle. Before joining the Bachelorette 2017 cast, what it's a big deal is the fact that Blake and Lucas knew each other before they came on the show. Apparently, Lucas has an ex-girlfriend named Brittany who is also part of the X-Isle cast. Along came Blake. He hit it off with Brittany and it created this, I guess, on-air rivalry between these two people in another fucking reality show. Like, and this was not addressed. It was not addressed that these two knew each other before they came onto the show or that they were essentially rivals on another fucking reality television show. And now we're going to reprise their role as Jean Valjean and Javert. Like, what the fuck, Bachelorette? Like, you can't even make up your own contrived bullshit. Yeah. You have to take it from another reality show with the same people. What the fuck, guys?
Yeah, that's what Griffin, when he found this, was like, this is so lazy that they didn't even trust that organically some people would not get along. They just brought in an already manufactured fight.
This is like if Korn was on fucking, like, Survivor and
with
was
Taylor.
And Korn and Taylor, or just like one of them. If fucking, Rod was on, Big Brother and was just like a real asshole in Big Brother and like, we gotta get that guy, but don't address that he was on Big Brother. Like, you can't just fucking do that.
Yeah.
We're going to take these two guys ahead of fight. I could go watch this other show, you mean, that came out like 3 years ago and see them fight in that one too? And it, like, so I want to jump ahead because at the rose ceremony, Lucas fucking sticks around and Blake sticks around. And it's like the only reason it happens is A, because Lucas is like a big obnoxious asshole, but also because there's this fight brewing. And now in like, of course, in the grand tradition of this show, like once two people are fighting, they're at least safe for a couple episodes while we extract every drop of nectar from that as we possibly can. And it's like, this is the fucking bedrock that you're building your house on for this season. Rachel fucking rules, and there's a lot of like entertaining dudes in this house, and it seemed like a few of them had pretty good connections with her, and we are going to have less time looking at that because we're going to be watching a fight that developed in another fucking reality show 3 years ago that The Bachelorette is going to pretend like didn't even fucking exist.
Yeah.
It is the dumbest, like, laziest, worst shit ever. It is the abs, and I think it represents a small portion of the people who create Bachelorette who are like, I know what to do. And it's like, oh, the same shit over and over again.
Yeah, like, exactly. It's this like super cynical decision that you don't trust the audience to enjoy a show that is a good show. You want to appeal to the lowest common denominator just in case that's going to be what hooks them in.
Cynical is a good word for it because Lucas, I think, represents like the most boiled down cynicism about the people who watch this show that could possibly exist, which is to say they're fucking babies. Like, I think Lucas is the human equivalent of like, here's something colorful where there wasn't something a second before. Laugh at that, you fucking babies. Bazinga. Yeah. Like... Yeah. It's unbelievable. And the fact that this awful dude is also part of this fight that existed in another show with the wiener dude. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. I don't know what to tell you. It's real gross.
It's not like, how could they? It's like, I don't want to watch this fucking show. I do want to watch this fucking show because I love a lot of it, but this is like, gotta have a fight. Well, what if they don't fight? I saw this shitty WeTV show, and there were these two randos who fought on it, and one of them kept yelling, like, boopers in it, so let's get those two jagoffs. What the fuck? No. Cast to other people.
Had you heard of this Exile show?
No. I don't know what WeTV is.
I'm wondering if they, like, thought they could get away with it because it didn't have a lot of viewership or something, because I've never heard of it.
What drives me crazy is, like, this is the biggest show. The Bachelorette is the biggest show. The Bachelor is, like, the biggest show. These are huge, huge fucking TV shows that are literally zeitgeist. They are literally pop culture phenomenons, and everybody watches and talks about it. And this is the fucking heat you're serving up right now?
Yeah, it's strange. It's strange in a season that seems on the surface more ambitious than previous seasons to see something so cynical and lazy.
There's a lot of stuff. Here's the thing about this premiere. It was not a departure at all from the core formula of this franchise. And this is just a part of that, I imagine. But, like, it is the worst example of this shit that I've ever seen on this show. Which is, because there's been some lazy, very contrived, like, drama that has sprung up on this show before. I've never seen it literally lifted from another reality show. It is unimaginable. And it's not even good. If it was good, maybe I could, like... Oh, you almost got away with it. If it weren't for you meddling kids, it's not good. It's not good. And you took it from another show and it's not it. It's two human beings that apparently have a real life beef. And you're like, we got to get these two real life people who hate each other on the show. If you're going to do that, find two interesting people that hate each other and get them on the show.
I don't want to give Lucas any more time.
I don't either.
So as we teased earlier, Rachel picks up the first impression rose, gives it to Brian.
Because he kisses real nice with his mouth so big.
They do a lot of aggressive kissing.
A lot of guppy gumming.
Mohit sees this and yells, no, from across the mansion. Which is
we are all Mohit in this moment. Mohit. It's a lot of big kissing.
One thing that we have noticed on previous seasons, but they're very explicit about this season, is how late the evening goes. Like, they are flat out showing us the sun is up by the time they're doing the rose ceremony. And they said that Rachel made it a point that she wanted to speak to every guy, which I don't know if it always happens or not. But
I don't think it does. I think her position of, like, which I thought was very noble, right? Yeah. Like, especially coming right off of your season where you know how it is. Her talking to every guy is probably why it went until 3 p.m. the next day.
Yeah, it is not breakfast. It is not brunch. It is lunchtime.
It is bright outside.
Yeah.
It is high noon.
And so if we're going to talk about who's eliminated, we're probably going to need...
Fuck, yeah. Let me even see if they've updated the website because they go fast and furious.
I don't think they did. I think you're going to have to look. Refinery29 did a list.
I'm going to flip through this fucking slideshow and give Just Jared a lot of clicks. Blake K seemed nice. He was a U.S. Marine veteran from San Francisco. Handsome dude.
He went home.
A lot of people were excited about that. This is like the fucking, like, fireworks in the sky in Hunger Games. Grant, he was an EMT. I don't know.
He was the one that showed up in an ambulance. And I said, that's not a great use of resources.
Absolutely not. Jedediah is an ER physician. And I don't... Oh, he said, like, you know, when Abraham met Rachel... I'm not getting my Bible trivia right.
Oh, yeah, I took notes on that if you want
to. I think I did, actually.
Or you did? When Jacob met Rachel.
There we go. I'm not as well versed in my old Testament. Jonathan the Tickle Monster. Don't let the door hit you with a good Lord split you, buddy. Kyle went home. I don't know. I don't remember anything about Kyle. Michael, I don't remember. Milton. I only remember because he kept growling when he talked to her.
Milton's the one with the suits that was really upset that he didn't get to wear his outfits.
Mohit, unfortunately, goes home. Rob goes home, I guess?
Yeah, Rob was the one that made the trading card.
Okay, he goes home. It's a lot. It's a lot of boys.
A lot of dudes. That's our first episode.
That is our first episode. So, and then we get the season preview, and... It looks good. It looks very by the books. And I think that's, like, my main takeaway is, like, Rachel is fantastic. I think she's going to be a very, very good bachelorette. This is going to be a season of The Bachelorette, the ABC television franchise. And it's going to be very similar to, I'm pretty sure, all of the other seasons of The Bachelorette. The only reason I would think it would be otherwise is because she's the first Black bachelorette and because it is the most diverse the cast has ever been. There were, I think, 11 Black men on of 31. And a few other people of color.
Yeah.
And so, which, you know, it's still, I think it was like just about half, like 50% people of color, 50% white dudes, which still isn't great, but,
significant.
It's significantly more than has been on the show before. So like, I don't know if I was expecting it to be different.
Night one is like, there's so much,
there's a lot to get through. I get that, but I also like when Chris Harrison comes out and introduces the season, or really throughout the entire episode, it's never referenced that she is the first Black bachelorette. It is only referenced in passing, like, other than I guess Dean talking about, like, did you like my thing I said where I wanted to date a Black woman and then never dated anyone not Black again? Like, that's about as the extent of it. So I guess it remains to be seen, like, whether they're going to do any more with this, like, genuinely, like, for this franchise, at least historic thing.
It's going to be a while, I think. We don't know yet. You know, we have high hopes.
We don't know yet, but I also think they could have done something in this episode sets up the rest of the season. They could have done something to say, like, to at least address it.
They had kind of an opportunity potentially to address some of the, you know, real gaps they've had in past seasons. And
there's like concrete ways to talk about that. Like, I'm sure they wouldn't talk about this on their television show, The Bachelor, but they were sued by two Black contestants who said, like, this show is unfair to people of color who are contestants because look at like how far we don't get ever. I don't know. I think it was a missed opportunity, and I think I was expecting it a little bit.
Yeah. Or even in her intro, they could have
done anything.
Talk about
done anything. Yeah. Yeah.
I recognize that it is The Bachelorette.
That's the thing.
We can't expect it to address, you know, all of the complicated issues that so many people continue to get wrong all the time. But it would be nice to see a little effort.
I think disappointed me a little bit is I expected something to be different. And really what we got was like a super by the books episode of The Bachelorette and what appears to be a very by the books season of The Bachelorette based on the preview that we watched.
Yeah.
Anyway, I want to talk about some stuff that we read. And I think this is like, I've really enjoyed, like, I wanted to do this because I think it's important for us to get other viewpoints in the show. And I think this is a cool way to do it. Like, since we announced that we were doing this, people have been posting, like really, really good articles in the Facebook group, like nonstop. And reading that stuff has sort of broadened my horizons because I think I know a lot about, like, the show and I'm interested in how it gets made and interpreting, like, why they make the decisions they make. But I don't possess any sort of faculties to diagnose like its larger cultural ramifications in like the media landscape. And I think we've probably shit the bed a couple times in that regard. And so we wanted to read some other stuff. And so we have a few selections here. And the first one that a lot of people were commenting on in the group is an article on Marie Claire from Roxane Gay. Headline, "The Bachelorette is a necessary shift in the conversation about Black womanhood." And this is just an excerpt from that. Rachel comes across as genuinely likable and interesting. She seems far less scripted than most of the people who've appeared on The Bachelor and Bachelorette and is capable of holding a conversation, another rarity. I'm rooting for this woman to find love or to at least have one hell of an adventure in the trying. But what we're really talking about here is representation. This season of The Bachelorette offers a much needed opportunity for Black women and the rest of the TV watching American public to see someone who looks like them portrayed as having a complex inner life and worthy of being wanted by eligible men. We'll be able to see a Black woman treated as marriage material. Rachel Lindsay as The Bachelorette marks a necessary shift in and expansion of the cultural conversation about Black womanhood. The bar for progress is generally really high. We measure it by the first Black president, the first Latina to serve on the Supreme Court, the first Black librarian of Congress. But sometimes progress is an incredibly beautiful, talented, and charming Black woman voluntarily tolerating the attention of 31 unworthy men on national television so that she might find love or something like it.
Yeah.
I like, this is the type of thing that like you and I as white folks would like, I don't think appreciate, Yeah. And I maybe it's just because I feel uncomfortable saying, like, well, it's something that there's a black woman, like, in this main role in this huge television show, even if the television show doesn't take steps to, like, acknowledge it. But I also think there's something to be said for, like, this is not a position that black women play on TV or in movies generally. Like, there's not a surplus of, like, romantic comedies starring black women in the lead where they are pursued and
where they're not the best friend.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I just think about how slow progress moves and how there's something so bittersweet about celebrating this.
Yeah.
But I mean, I get it in the sense that, you know, when you're growing up and you have all these ideas about romance and you don't see anyone like you,
yeah, sure,
getting to play that role, it's significant.
There's another article on Huffington Post written by Ziba Blay, Why It Matters That White People Are Watching a Black Bachelorette, that is sort of in the same lines, where she says, really, this moment is about non-black viewers seeing and recognizing what we have always known. It's about continuing to challenge the idea that a black female lead on a mainstream show, reality or scripted, means that the show itself is targeted only to black viewers. It remains to be seen, of course, how this will all play out. Well, show tackle race in a meaningful way? Will Lindsay be subjected to more scrutiny and slut shaming than her predecessors? Hopefully the show will spark a deeper conversation about a black woman, her right to be the center of attention, and her right to be loved. Yeah. And I you know, it's doing that. And I think that, like, there have been stars of this franchise, either bachelorettes or bachelors, who I think get, like, turned on by the show itself. Wait, that's a weird way of putting it. The show turns on them in a way. Like, Caitlyn's season got really, really gross and very, very slut-shamey. Juan Pablo, I think, earned it, definitely. But, like, by the end of his season, there have been a lot of bachelors, I think, that by the end of their season, they were just as much a villain as anybody who had been on the show. I'm optimistic that that's not going to happen with Rachel. It doesn't seem like she's going to get any kind of villain edit. I don't think that this show will turn on her like it has and been so cruel to some of the people in the starring role. I want to talk about one more, and this was on All Things Considered. It was Eric Deggans. The Bachelorette may have a black star, but it is still set in a white world. That is a bit more critical, if that headline clued you in. Though host Chris Harrison began the episode by saying, let's take a look at the Bachelorette everybody's talking about, he never really said why people were talking about her. One of the black men noted how diverse the pool of suitors was, and there was an awkward moment where the episode ended with several suitors freestyle rapping. Really, Bachelorette? From the show's perspective, this was likely a home run. They presented a diverse field of contestants and a black bachelorette without upsetting the bedrock formula that makes this reality TV soap opera successful. But for those of us hoping to see some of the show's basic messaging about culture, class, and race changed, it was a disappointment. True diversity isn't just about expecting black people to assimilate into a mostly white world. It's about widening that world to reflect the experiences of everyone in it. With any luck, maybe they'll get around to that before this season is over.
Yeah, so that's some of the criticism that we were able to read just in the past 24 hours.
Yeah, sure.
So I feel like waiting a day was a really good call on our part, because it gave us time to kind of see what the reactions were and also kind of hear from people who might be new to the franchise or, you know, people that have perspectives we don't have.
Yeah, we're not people of color. Like, I don't watch TV with this lens of, like, hoping for good representation. Like, I am a straight cis white dude. Like, pretty much most television is, like, being made for me, so I'll go out there and buy Pepsi or whatever the fuck. And so, like, I don't know. I think it was genuinely eye opening. I don't read about this fucking show really ever. I just, like, watch it and then we do this podcast. And so it was really illuminating. And please keep sharing these articles in the Facebook group, because I think it's, like, broadening my sort of, like, consumption of how I watch this show.
Yeah, and raising the level of our criticism just ourselves.
I hope so.
You know, I mean, not that anyone turns to our comedy podcast for real, like, intellectual debate on the merits of this program, but I think it's worthwhile when you watch a show that is even considered, like, trash TV to think about what it means for a lot of people in our country.
I think reading all of this stuff, like, I think the biggest thing that's changed is I don't treat it like it's fucking trash TV. This is a fucking monolithic television show that everybody on earth watches. maybe not everybody on Earth, but a lot of fucking people watch this television show and to sort of just dismiss it and just say, oh, this gross thing happened. Yeah, but it's like a toilet TV show. Yeah, it's a toilet TV show that everybody watches. So, like, let's hold it accountable for something, at least. Mm-hmm. My expectation is that it's just going to be another season of The Bachelorette, and it's going to have a really good star in Rachel. And from what we've heard and what we've read, Rachel did an interview where she said she is engaged. So we know that she will find love probably in this hopeless place. But yeah. I think it's just going to be another season of The Bachelorette. And this first episode has kind of set my expectations.
I'm sure there will be moments. I'm sure that they can't avoid the issue of race coming up ever.
It would be buck wild if they did that for a whole, if they suspended that conversation for an entire season. It would be beyond the pale even for this television show. But I guess we'll just have to wait and see. I'm like, I know I came down hard on like the Lucas Blake stuff is like unimaginable. And I know we came down hard on some stuff, but like, I really am. I'm looking forward to next Monday. I'm looking forward to talking about this show more.
We're really optimistic about Rachel.
I love watching Rachel. She's like very, very funny and kind of a nerd, which I think is great. And,
seems to know herself really well. Doesn't seem like somebody who is going to, fall apart easily.
That's the thing. Like, we've talked about how there've been great bachelorettes in the past, but those great bachelorettes were even better contestants in the season before, because this show makes you kind of fucking boring.
Yeah.
And Rachel wasn't boring in this premiere, and I hope that doesn't change. I'm really excited for it. And also, I'm really psyched that Lucas was just not in the season preview very much. So I'm hoping for a swift episode 2 departure there.
So I wanted to thank. Somebody sent us an official Bachelor in Paradise t-shirt.
Hell yeah.
Which I was tickled to receive. The person has a friend who, is intimately involved with reality television.
Chris Harris, do you think it's Chris?
No. And so thank you to, Listener T for sending us the Bachelor in Paradise t-shirt. I was super tickled to receive that.
Yeah, it's really great.
And thank you to everybody that sends us things in the mail. It's always really exciting.
It's a treat. It's like a little Christmas every time we come back.
Just the heartfelt notes thanking us for spending the time on this is just, it's nice.
Wow, we spent some time on this one, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, we really did.
Oops.
We had a lot of ground to cover.
I guess we did. Thanks, everybody. Whoop-boo!
Thanks for letting us publish it a day late.
It's all just about, you know,
if we had done this.
What booming is just like, you look at yourself and I'm going to go into our nursery. I'm just going to scream what boom full throat volume.
And I will leave the house and you will have to deal with the aftermath.
Of our baby being fucking cool and super funny then. What if I did it and he just like stood up and he was like, what boom? Can you even imagine? And then we went and we watched fucking Ace Ventura together. What a good night with dad and son. Are you leaving?
So this has been Rose Buddies.
Thanks for listening to Rose Buddies. Join us next time, next Wednesday, Wednesday.
Hopefully we'll have less wabooms to say and share.
I think I would love it. Let's get one last one out of our system and then maybe he'll be sent home. Mm-mm. Oh, okay. We've already gotten the last one of our, if I had known, I would have done it good.
You said we were going to have three.
Here's my problem though, baby. Can I say?
Oh, God.
It's fucking hilarious. It's fucking hysterical, dude. Can you imagine? I feel like you don't get it. It's like, it's a funny word to say. And then to say like, that's my whole life is like really it's like really goofy. Till next time, I'm Griffin McElroy.
My married name is Rachel McElroy.
Boom. Final rose. Stay with us on this journey of joy. Spoiler alert. She ends up with Soulja Boy.
I'm Biz.
And I'm Teresa. And we host the weekly comedy podcast, One Bad Mother.
We celebrate our moments of parenting genius,
as well as our failures.
just like, we're going to have hot dogs. And I'm like, no, we're having fun. Everybody loves hot dogs.
Yeah.
And it just like smashes that thing right on my chest. And then I'm just crying in the middle of like kids space while people are like literally dancing with their children.
Parenting can be sad and painfully funny at the same time.
So join us each week as we admit that this is hard, but we're getting really good at it.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you download podcasts.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.